We're still talking about the fires of last September, and we probably will be for generations. Jackson County lost 2,500 homes, most in the Almeda Drive fire and some in the South Openchain fire. Many, many people and efforts have formed to help fire survivors get the help they need. And there have been many efforts to get our minds around what happened, news stories and documentary films and books. We have another book to talk about today. Fire, Fear, Hope brings together Rogue Valley writers telling stories of the September fires in prose and poetry and even some pictures. Our guests are Lois Schlegel, Janet Boggia, Ginger Rilling, and Ann Botzer. Thank you all for joining us, Lois.
Hello, thank you.
Janet.
Hello, good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you here. Ginger.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
And Ann.
Good morning. Okay. Thank you for having us.
Good to have you all here. Our guests represent not quite half of the nine writers in the group. Some of the nine have been published. Some write mostly for fun, but they have met as a writers group weekly for 15 years now. All are determined to leave the place, meaning the Earth, better than they found it. Lois, let's start with you, since you wrote the introduction. Talk about how the project came together.
Yeah, well, one of the things that is important in our work together as writers is just sharing our experiences and talking about how the things that happen in our lives affect us all, and then bringing that to the page. And so we kind of spontaneously all began to write about our experiences of the fire, and as we shared those stories and the poetry that came from it, it seemed natural to bring that together and create something that we could share with others as well.
Of the nine writers, did any lose homes in these fires last September?
None of us lost homes. My son did lose his home and is now living with us as a result of the fire. So most of us are writing from a place of some distance and privilege, for sure, even in our case with our son, because we were able to have resources to help him.
Mm-hmm. Janet, and tell me how to pronounce your last name. I want to make sure I'm getting it right.
Yes, Janet. It's Jan Boggia.
Boggia, okay.
Yes,
okay.
And I did not lose my home, but for the first time, I think that the fires hit me at such a place that I really started thinking about dying and the possibility that all of us in this valley could really lose everything. And for the first time, I packed my things and thought about where to go. And even though I've worked, for example, years ago, I worked with CERT and things like that, but for some reason, last year was profound. And so out of that came this writing, and I think what it left me with was a profound gratitude for my life.
Ginger Rilling, the wind even before the fire certainly spooked me, but you have apparently a much longer history with wind.
Yeah, I do. Growing up in El Paso, Texas, it just seemed like it was always windy and hot and dry, but no fires. It was just windy. And so I carry with me a distrust of the wind to some degree that certainly was ignited on the night before the fire as the winds continued to blow all night.
I was I'm relieved or something to read that you actually put in words that you were screaming at JPR at home that day, and not the only person to do so, we have learned. Tell us why.
Tell you why?
Yeah.
Because I depend on JPR so much for local, information and news and updates. And, of course, then later I learned that some of your staff, perhaps you included, were some of the ones who were really in danger of losing their homes and had to get out of the building and go home and evacuate. So I felt remorse for having screamed at you that day, but in the moment, that was just really all that was on my mind.
Well, I fully understand. And in fact, I just want to let people know we have instituted procedures about evacuation warnings and things like that, and figured out how to get people from place to place. So just an aside, but yes, I could certainly relate. You're not the only person who told us they were screaming at the radio that day.
Right.
Ann Botzer, you had a home burned down, but not in September. Tell that story briefly.
That's right. In the 90s, we had a fire in our home, and we lost our home and lost almost all of our possessions. So I've been through this. So now our new home was right on the cusp of the Openchain fire, and and we didn't have to evacuate, but within just a few miles of us, there was mandatory evacuation. So, of course, I sat up all night for many nights watching fire maps to see if we did need to evacuate. And what I experienced, I think when you have something like this, was your empathy for what others are going through is really ignited. And I almost felt like this fire was worse than when we went through it ourselves because of my concern and worry for all the people who lost their homes in these fires.
So the fire that destroyed your home, and where was that?
I live in Sam's Valley, right kind of on the edge of Sam's Valley, and it was a house fire in the 90s.
Okay, so not a wildfire.
Right? No.
So somewhat different situation. All right, we'll come back and talk more with our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange. They are four of the nine writers who came together for the book Fire, Fear, Hope, which also has cover art by Betty LeDuc. But we are joined by Ann Botzer, Ginger Rilling, Jan Boja, and Lois Schlegel. And we'll come back and actually hear some of the poetry and some of the prose from our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join in as well. We still have a fair amount of community therapy to do here. So join us with your tale of getting through the fires and the things that it made you think about. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange with Fire, Fear, Hope. Four of the nine authors, and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange and the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are exploring anew the fires of last September through the work of a group of Rogue Valley writers. They've been meeting as a writers group weekly for 15 years now. Nine of them got together to put entries in prose and poetry, and there are some pictures as well, in the slender volume Fire, Fear, Hope, with proceeds earmarked for United Way of Jackson County. Our guests are Lois Schlegel, Jan Boja, Ginger Rilling, and Ann Botzer. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you would like to comment about the fires and your experience as well, because all those stories are valid, and a lot of us still need to talk about them, frankly. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Lois, why don't we start reading some of this? If you can share your poem called September 8th.
Yes, absolutely. September 8th. There is a fury in fire, a fury to consume, to destroy, to catch the wind and jump and dance, to send out embers the way dandelions send out seeds. There is an intelligence in fire, to know its hunger and find its food, to eat with abandon, with passion, with fury, knowing as it must that its time is short, and soon it will die into the ash, knowing that we humans no longer carry it from camp to camp in a vessel made just to honor its light and heat and life-giving power. So it explodes upon us, seizes its freedom, feeds on our lives, our homes, our forests, as if in retribution for no longer being carried honored, loved.
That is the poem September 8th by Lois Schlegel, reading it herself from the book Fire, Fear, Hope. Did you think of fire having a personality before September 8th, Lois?
No, I didn't. Absolutely not. This poem kind of came whole cloth from kind of the way that it seemed animated in my mind and having a purpose in the way it consumed.
Janet Boja, you write about packing to evacuate as almost like an out-of-body experience. Talk about what that was like.
You know, that's such a wonderful way to put it because, you know, I looked around my home and I looked at all the things I loved. I'm sure many of the listeners did the same thing. And I realized, they have to go. Everything has to go. I have to really give it to Pele, you know, the goddess of fire. And then I did think about what it would be like to just start over with nothing. And so I actually know 3 or 4 people who lost precious things. As I say in the essay, one man lost all of a lifetime's worth of paintings that he did. And another woman lost, she had a book collection. She loved her books. And another lost her entire business of artwork patterns that were sold all over the world for stitching and sewing kinds of things. And it's just, I end up with the hope, really. That is what it left me with, being so hopeful about what we need to do in the world to really solve our problems. And we've evolved to have a mind that can actually go beyond innate responses. But what we have to do is really dedicate ourselves and commit ourselves to outcomes, such as closing the ozone hole, which took 3 or 4 years with people really giving up chlorofluorocarbons, even though they were so easy to use for industry and so profitable. But we had a purpose, and the world came together, and of even Margaret Thatcher, of all people, asked the countries with a lot of resources to help the countries with less, and the whole thing worked. And it's a model that we can use going forward to try to solve global warming, which is what put us in the kind of position we're in the first place.
But we are capable of working together. You're still confident of that.
We are capable. And that is what the hope part of this is. It's we go through the experience. We actually integrate it with our own lives, which it's so much easier. I much would rather go for a walk or a bike ride or a cup of coffee and not think about this. But I think this really did it for me. So that's how I feel about it.
We are talking to 4 of the 9 authors of the slender volume Fire, Fear, Hope, Prose and Poetry about the September 8th fires in Jackson County here on the Jefferson Exchange. Ginger Rilling, talk about where you spent the night of the fire.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we were trying to just get out of town like everybody else was, but heading out on the rural roads in Talent, of course, Culver Road was choked, and you couldn't even get onto it, and we didn't want to sit there waiting for an hour just to get onto it. So we turned around and headed up into the hills above Talent and noticed that there was a lot of people up there parked in their cars, probably having encountered the same thing that we did. And we ended up at the Talent Cemetery, where a lot of people were staying. We're just parked, and we could watch the fire from there. So it felt somehow, in some strange way, secure to be there, where we could keep an eye on the fire for whatever it was worth and see in which way it was moving. And we had sort of a little bit of camaraderie in that togetherness up there in the cemetery.
So you heard a lot of wrong information, I guess we all did, though, about things that had and had not burned.
Yes, the rumors were flying. I mean, there was very little information, as you know, and so we were relying on friends who could use their cell phones and get through to us with bits and pieces of of information and watching the fire, it appeared that it had was devouring everything in downtown Talent. So, of course, we thought maybe the schools were gone, the grocery store was gone, the Camelot must be gone. And I thank God none of that turned out to be true. But obviously the devastation was horrendous.
Indeed.
With even those structures remaining.
Yeah, because it was certainly patchy in downtown Talent. I'm a Talent resident myself, so I can attest to the fact that it, you know, here safe, there not. It was just kind of weird how it all worked out. It was, you know, like a tornado. It touches down here and there.
Yeah, it was so erratic, that fire. It was unbelievable. I still marvel every single day as I drive through Talent and Phoenix and see the structures that are remaining and right next door to them the ones that are gone. It just was incredible.
Yeah, and I drove into Medford the other day and glanced off to the left, and I thought, why can I see the guardrail on 99 North so easily? And then I realized it's because Bear Lake Estates isn't there anymore.
Yes.
That kind of thing, yeah. So, Ann Botzer, you write about the things you lost in the earlier fire and then seeing a woman wearing a vest like one you once had. What was that moment like?
Well, that was a moment, you know, at first, and it's true, you're just so grateful that there was no loss of life in your family. Even our dog survived. So that's where you put your love and your energy, and is where you should. But several months later, I'm sitting in a restaurant, and a woman walked in wearing a vest identical to one I had had. I hadn't even thought about that vest, but it had burned in the fire, and I just started crying really hard for the loss. And it made me have an understanding from there about how much our possessions mean to us. And, you know, a mug that we use every day, or a chair, maybe an old chair that's just comfortable, but we like the way it feels when we sit down, and how those things have meaning in our lives. And again, I have such compassion for people who've lost everything, because the objects we have do have meaning for us, and they matter. And to lose those and start all over, it's a big loss. It's a big loss. And, of course, then there's the more profound loss of things like family photos, mm-hmm. and those things that have a strong emotional meaning to us. One thing I'd like to say about the title of our book, Fire, Fear, Hope, my own personal experience with fear is that it immobilizes me. So writing about this experience really helped, because when you write about something, whether it's on a computer or whether you're using a pencil and some lined paper, you get it outside of yourself. You take that tangle that's inside and you get it out. And you can hold it out in front of you, and you can read it and look at it, and it does give you a different perspective. So one of our hopes in writing this book is, as you have said, Jeffrey, is that it will cause others to write their own stories or to talk about their own stories with each other. And when you do that, you help eliminate fear. And then that opens up our creativity and our imagination to the solutions that we know we need to have in order to leave a livable planet for our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah, and there was, you know, when you think about the fact that we, in a divided time, this is a shared experience. It's not a good shared experience, but it's a shared experience, and one that certainly can, that we can help ourselves and each other by talking about.
Yes, for sure.
We are talking to four of the nine authors of Fire, Fear, Hope that came out of a writer's group that has met weekly in the Rogue Valley for 15 years now. We have with us Ann Botzer, Lois Schlegel, Jan Boja, and Ginger Rilling, and you can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts. I mean, what is your fire story, even if you haven't written it down? Is there a memory, a moment from the fire or its aftermath that you can't ignore? Give us a call, 800-838-3760, 838-3760, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's get back to some of the poetry. Lois, can you read, did you already read September 8th?
I did.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm losing track of
That's
things
okay.
here.
It's all right.
So, but is there a one moment for you, Lois, that best symbolizes your September 8th?
I think it is the picture that my husband sent me when he was stuck in traffic. He stuck his phone out of the car window and took a picture of the smoke and the flames that were behind them, and they were stuck and not moving. And so that image is kind of burned into my mind. That and just also when they pulled into the driveway and seeing that my son and my husband were both okay, they were alive.
Mm-hmm. Jan, let me come to you because you do have some poems we haven't gotten to yet. The ones right in the front of the book, For Firefighters and For Those Who Lost So Much.
Oh, yes. My husband was, for years, a volunteer firefighter, and our grandson has joined firefighting in California now. And they're both dedicated and talk a lot about it. My husband's a ham. And so, and my incident with...
You mean amateur radio. You don't mean he's a ham.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And I knew a firefighter who was head of our department in the city of Mountain View, and he lives here in Ashland, and I ran into him a few years ago in Lithia Park, and we were talking about fires in Palo Alto from the past, and he made it so vivid that once there's a lot of wind, the fires, they can't really do anything about the fires. They can chase after them, and they can they're just constantly whipped forward. And that image came back to me when I was hearing and following the fires here, and so it made me appreciate the firefighters so much more. And that was part of what I wrote here.
And would you read those two to us, please?
Sure. It's our dedication, and it's for two groups, one with the firefighters. You care and race to blazing fury against instinct towards terror, an act of love. You face your fear and act to protect, to shield, to save precious lives. We hold you in our hearts. And then for those who lost so much, who raced from flames, demolishing, engulfing, devouring your world, like birds in flight, whipped by storm fury, caught, then flying free. Your spirit, like the phoenix, resilience, resurrection, we hold you in our hearts.
Those are For Firefighters and For Those Who Lost So Much, the dedication poems at the front of Fire, Fear, Hope by Jan Boja. I don't know. There's a couple of weird bits of irony about these fires. For one, the fact that one of them burned a community called Phoenix.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was in my mind when I wrote this too. Because I could have used other images for that. You know, there's the salamander and other mythological creatures, and I thought, my God, you know, it's Phoenix.
Practically screams to be written into this, didn't it? Yeah. Ginger, I want to ask you, Ginger Rilling, about after the night in the cemetery, talk about what it was like to see your home standing and how close the fire had come to it.
Oh, yeah, I'll never forget driving home that morning and coming down our driveway and seeing our home still standing. It makes me want to cry right now, because really all I was thinking of were all the people that were going to come home and not see that house standing there anymore. They were coming home to a blackened lot where everything was gone. And, you know, Jeffrey, this fire was so devastating in that it was so hot that it literally, you know, everything was gone in the homes that burned. There was nothing remaining. So I was filled with gratitude for my own fortune, but also with anguish for all of those who had lost so much. And it wasn't until I was able to go down into Talent in the following days and see the work that had already begun and so many volunteers and first responders, you know, on the streets doing whatever they could to begin to repair the damage, and also to provide for those people who had lost everything. You know, the relief centers got set up right away, and food was being provided, all the necessary items one needs to just get by day to day. Were being, you know, assembled and sorted and being given away to anyone who needed them. So it was a mixed bag of relief and also gratitude for the effort that is still happening in our valley. I mean, there's just so much work being done still to provide relief and help to those who have lost their homes, and not only have lost their homes, but have no resources and have no idea of when they might be able to have a home again. You know, still living in FEMA trailers, still living in hotel rooms, and unable to get the support that they need to actually rebuild a home. It's enormous. It's devastating, and I think many of us are doing whatever we can to, in the little ways that we can, to assist those who need the help the most.
Yeah, certainly an odd feeling for survivors that I can attest to when you know that things have happened to people and your own life gets to return to more or less normal.
Exactly.
And then you're aware that all these other people around you are still in need. These are among the themes dealt with in the book Fire, Fear, Hope, with writings and prose and poetry by 9 Rogue Valley writers, all women. Betty LeDuc provided some artwork for the cover. There are some pictures in it as well. We'll continue talking to Ginger Rilling, Ann Botzer, Lois Schlegel, and Jan Bozja when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join us with your fire story. We got a lot to talk about still. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I'm glad you're listening. We are talking about something difficult to talk about, the September 8th fires of last year, which hit Jackson County particularly hard, with 2,500 homes lost between the Almeda Drive and South Oban Chain fires. And our guests are people who have written their thoughts down about those fires in both prose and poetry in a book called Fire, Fear, Hope. There are 9 authors in all. We have 4 of them with us: Ginger Rilling, Ann Botzer, Lois Schlegel, and Jan Bozja. And you're welcome to join the conversation on the exchange and share your fire story as we're hearing from our guests. There's a lot to talk about still and will be for many years ahead of us. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Ann Botzer, thanks for your patience. I'm back to you now. Can I get you to read your poem, Climate Change, from page 53 of the book?
Certainly. Climate change. Earth roils. Her fields move. Crash like waves at high tide. Grasses waving, weaving. Footing uncertain. Dizzy, dizzy. Nightmare dizzy. Her river placid. Deep. Mysterious as my mother's body at the moment of her death. Morning, I lie down, feel her wounds, pray again, beg healing, beg forgiveness. Not too late, not too late, not too late.
The poem was called Climate Change. Ann Botzer, the poet, reading it to us. It is getting late, though, isn't it, Ann?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yes, it is. But, you know, it's our hope that if we deal with our fear, that will unleash our imagination and our creativity. That's one of the things we've seen following this fire, the incredible resilience of the human spirit, the compassion. And there are many groups, and you've had them on, Jeffrey, who are working on climate change. And there's good science in these groups. They tell us what we need to do. We need to listen, and we need to energize ourselves, and we need to take the actions, and we need to hope that it's not too late.
What do you make of the ongoing resistance to thinking climate change is a problem, Anne?
It's difficult for me to imagine that people living here, having gone through these fires throughout our state last year, can still have resistance to the fact that climate change is the root cause of this. I guess I'm asking people to call upon their own intelligence and to look to be witnesses to what's going on around us, and then to take action. And I think our group, we mentioned in our book that, you know, we've all been involved in much before, and this book has given us renewed interest in writing, but also in making this planet a better place. You might have a perspective on your question, Jeffrey. You've interviewed so many people about it. What do you think?
Well, it's pretty overwhelming, isn't it, the evidence? And yet, you know, there's the group of people who say, well, you know, 3% of people who think they're all wrong is enough for me. Isn't that interesting? So, and Anne, the evergreens you planted along the property that you write about here, are they proof of your faith that we can write things?
Yes. I write in my piece that, you know, in defiance of evidence about climate change, we planted baby evergreen trees along the perimeter of our property this year, and they're tiny now, but they're beautiful, and our hope is that they're going to grow and be a screen to our neighbor's farm equipment. And we, in planting those trees, we made a decision that the earth is going to survive, that it is going to go on, and for me, it was kind of an act of sweet defiance, and it frankly feels wonderful, and I would ask other people to do similar things.
Acts of faith that the world will continue, for sure. That's interesting. Lois Schlegel, I want to come back to you because we've only touched briefly, I think, on a personal concern you had. Tell us about your son and your worries about him amidst the fire.
Yeah, I have an adult son who lived with schizophrenia, and he lived in one of the trailer parks that was completely consumed by the fire. And so, of course, I was concerned about even him being able to evacuate, and then the larger concern, which is just the lack of resources that there are for folks with mental illness, places to live and things like that. You know, he lived in a place that was affordable for him on disability, and there are really very, very few places. There were, even before the fire, few places like that available, and, of course, fewer now. And so, you know, one of the concerns I have that's ongoing is, you know, the lack of low-income housing that we have in the Valley, the lack of services for both people living with mental illness and also families. You know, it was part of what happened for us was just a reminder of how alone we often feel in caring for an adult child with such a devastating illness because there just aren't many resources. That being said, we had amazing support from the community. And, you know, one of the things that keeps him going is music, and he lost all of his musical instruments. And so people came forth and gave him guitars and art supplies, which is the other thing he does. So that was really welcome.
Jan Boja, I wanted to ask, as you got back into your house from evacuation, how long before you moved the stuff away from the front door?
It stayed there for about 2 weeks, I think. But I still have, I had gotten out my old files and things I've written that I always have this thing about something I want to write next or something I want to, and I kept all my writings packed up, ready to go, because I don't want to go through that again, the filing and the unfiling and the finding and the leaving behind. So I've got two suitcases still packed with files. But, you know, I wanted to build on one of your questions, Jeffrey, about is there a possibility for changing the ways in which we think about our planet? And the books I'm writing on now are on evolution, and the whole point is that I think that as humans, we have to start, instead of identifying as Americans or Russians or Chinese or whatever, we have to start identifying as Earthlings. And I have this feeling that we act out of how we see ourselves, the stories we tell about ourselves and our world. And if we start thinking of ourselves as Earthlings, instead of saying all the time, is this good for this group of people, or is this group, is this good for Americans? We would say, is this good for the Earth? And we would really focus our attention more on that. And it would help direct, like, my own personal actions. I haven't eaten meat since the 70s, and it was hard at first. And now I'm so grateful. And my husband loves the food I cook, and he's half a vegetarian. But I think it's the little things that everyone does that actually walk the talk. And all around us, we are seeing this morning on your program, you had that wonderful group that starting a bloom or a way of using human waste and recycling to use the water that is so scarce now. And so I think that the world is starting to change, and people are really realizing. And there'll always be people who want to believe a different story about the planet, but I think the majority are going to, we have to do it. And so I think we will.
A couple of listeners who have contacted us during the course of this program, Anne in Grants Pass writes, I felt so deeply for those in the Talent and Phoenix fires, as I had a house fire years ago. I was at work and I got a call telling me my house was on fire. I raced home, but firefighters wouldn't let me in to save my animals. I lost two cats, a rabbit, and a bush baby I raised from birth at a zoo where I worked 12 years before. I did have some bright spots. Part of a closet was still standing where some special photos were saved, and the help I got from the community was heartwarming. Thanks to those in this writers group for also helping people heal and search for solutions. From Anne in Grants Pass. Thank you so much for that, Anne. And I have another email here I want to read from, hang on, we'll get to it. Vicky. Vicky writes, much like your description of the vest, I experienced little and sometimes great stabs of pain almost daily when I stumble on another memory in quotes, that is gone. Having lost very special family treasures that were in storage brings the sadness back. I used to appreciate wind. Now it terrifies me. That from Vicky. And a major question from Susan in Ashland, who says, thank you. Where do we get the book? Ginger?
Yes. Well, first of all, I hope that you're going to provide some email addresses so that your listeners can contact any of us, and we all have books that we're happy to give away. Mm-hmm. Also, the book is available at Bloomsbury in Ashland. Mm-hmm. And the United Way is going to have copies on hand, as well as we're going to provide those for them so that they can pass them out to anyone who wants them. Mm-hmm. Am I leaving something out? Anyone else?
Amazon. It's available on Amazon.
Right.
Okay.
And it'll be available at the Book Exchange in Ashland starting next week. Also, we have books that are black and white and others that are in color. Mm-hmm. And the difference in price is minimal, and most of the money will go to the United Way.
Okay, I was looking for it at Amazon this morning. I hadn't found it yet. But
No,
it is there. It is there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that, you know, we're charging $12 for the book. And if you provide our email addresses, Jeffrey, on your website, anyone can contact one of us. And of that money, at least $10 will go directly to United Way. and the needs are still overwhelming. So we're hoping to generate some funds to help people who still have needs, practical needs, and we're thrilled that United Way, along with, as you said, many other groups in the Valley, are still working to help.
Do you want to pick one person to be the email recipient, and I'll put that up on the website?
I would be happy to do that. This is Ann.
Okay.
You could put my email address there, and I'll be happy to coordinate that with anyone who'd like a copy of the book.
Okay, and you can tell it to me now so we can get on the air, too.
Yes, it's my name, Ann Botzer, AnnEBatzer, at AOL.com.
AOL.com, okay. And I will make sure that that gets up on the website as well. So that'll be the one place. And I'll see if I can find that Amazon link, too, because so far I've only been able to link to United Way as the recipient for this. And then a final question, I guess, because we're almost out of time here. Sarah and Ashland wants to know if you can discuss the process. Let's see. We haven't heard from Ann in a while.
The process of...
The process of creating the works. I mean, did you guys get back together in group? Had you been meeting in a Zoom group or something through the pandemic?
Yes, we've been meeting in Zoom, and the way our writing group is set up is two of us read each week. And so we just, you know, we discovered that people were starting to write about the fire, and gradually all of us had written something about the fire. And then David Drury, who is... has a very small publishing company and is the husband of Asifa Kanji, one of our members. He offered to put the book together for us, and it was a beautiful offer. Anyone who's put a book together knows that it requires a lot of detail work. So our thanks to David for offering to put the book together, and we, of course, wanted any proceeds to go to help those who, because the need, according to Deanne Everson, the executive director of United Way of Jackson County, the need is still overwhelming.
Final question then, in just a few seconds for Lois. Fair to assume that you're all still writing about this?
We still are writing. Most of us are actually moved on to other things, some of us that will include some of these stories in our own memoirs and things. So they will continue in that way.
All right. It is 9 writers altogether who participated in the book Fire, Fear, Hope, and we have been joined by 4 of them. Thanks to Ginger Rilling, Ann Botzer, Lois Schlegel, and Jan Boja. Pleasure to talk to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you.